welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Lepone, your host for an hour of romance. Later on, the series Romance from 1954, but first, the story The Unguarded Moment on the Radio City Playhouse. This NBC episode first heard on August 29th, 1949.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 53, as written and directed by Harry W. Junkin. Ladies and gentlemen, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred Collins, and good evening, everyone. We have held as our aim on Radio City Playhouse the type of drama that will please most of the people most of the time. Tonight, however, we are presenting the type of drama that will only please most of the people once in a while, because it is a subtle and penetrating love story written about adults and written for adults. There is a deep and underlying emotion and a simple situation involving some people who, in our opinion, are very fascinating. With us to play the leading role of Dr. Philip Trask is Mr. John Larkin, one of radio's most distinguished actors and a favorite of Radio City Playhouse listeners. Here, then, is our show. John Larkin as Philip Trask and Marilyn Erskine as Paula, his wife, in The Unguarded Moment, Attraction 53 on Radio City Playhouse.
Dr. Philip Trask, psychiatrist, heedless of the rain and the dull gray Manhattan morning, walks from Grand Central to his office on East 61st Street. His face is drawn and tight, and it is hard to tell whether the wetness on his cheeks is from the rain or not. It is probably the rain, because it is impossible to imagine tears in Dr. Trask's eyes. He stands tense and rigid in the crowded elevator, sickened a little by the smell of steaming, sodden raincoats. Just before he opens the door to his office on the fourth floor, he takes out his handkerchief and, yes, he wipes his eyes. Good morning, Miss...
Dr. Trask, I'm so glad you're early. Mrs. Pearson was here when I got down. She said she had to see you this morning.
Mrs. Pearson?
Donald's mother. She's inside your office. I tried to tell her you had appointments all morning, but she insisted she had... Anything wrong, Dr. Trask?
No, not a thing. Who's first this morning?
Mr. Kepler.
Well, I'll talk to Mrs. Pearson until he arrives. Will you buzz me when he gets here, please?
Yes, Dr. Trask.
Mrs. Pearson?
I'm sorry to come without an appointment, Dr. Trask, but it's important. It's about Donald.
And what about Donald?
I think I may as well tell you, Dr. Trask, that in my opinion, psychiatrists are a lot of nonsense.
You're entitled to your opinion.
I've decided that Donald isn't to see you anymore. I don't like the way he's acting toward me, and I don't like his attitude toward anyone else either.
Oh, really?
You've had him now for 8 months, and you haven't done a thing for him except make him disrespectful and ungrateful. He was far better off before he started going to you in the first place. If he'd only listened to me...
Mrs. Pearson, Donald is 24. Don't you think he's old enough to be allowed to decide for himself whether he wants
to... He most certainly is not. Besides, it happens to be me that's paying you $25 an hour, 2 hours a week, to sit around and talk about what he did when he was a baby. Besides, the citizen wouldn't be his. It would be yours. Everything he does and says and thinks is yours. He just isn't my boy anymore. If he was, he wouldn't think and say the things he does. He used to be considerate and kind. Now he's positively rude. You've ruined him. You've absolutely ruined him.
I think it would be wise to allow Donald to come in and discuss the situation with me himself.
I didn't expect you to let $50 a week go without a struggle.
So you're the carrier.
The what?
The carrier of the germs of belittlement and fear and dependence.
Now, look here, Dr. Trask. Don't you try to turn this thing on me. I've lain awake nights worrying about Donald.
Are you sure you're not more concerned about yourself?
Now, see here, Dr. Trask. If you want to know what I really think about you and about the whole blasted lot of you fakers that swindle people every day with
a whisper... Mrs. Pearson, I don't like your attitude and I don't like you.
What?
Nor do I think it fair to Donald to discuss his case with you any further. Will you leave, please?
Why, of all... All right. All right.
Dr. Trask's face is white. Two tragedies, his own and Donald Pearson's, and the day hasn't even begun. 8 months of heartache and hope have been rendered futile, and a weak, struggling boy with wide, apprehensive eyes has gone down for the third time, unless he can decide for himself. But at lunchtime, Dr. Trask's phone rang.
Yes?
Donald Pearson on one.
Right. Hello, Donald.
Dr. Trask, it's Donald. Donald Pearson?
Yes, I know. How are you, Donald?
All right, I guess.
Where are you?
In a drugstore, a pay station, 56.
Do you want to come up?
Well, I didn't know if...
What is it, Donald?
Well, I guess you won't be expecting me this afternoon, will you?
You come at 5 on Tuesdays. This is Tuesday, isn't it?
Yes, but didn't you speak to my mother?
Yes, yes, I did.
Well, she doesn't want me to see you anymore.
Then how do you feel about it?
Well, Mother doesn't think I...
Hello?
She doesn't think it's doing me any good and that I should spend my money, I mean her money, on something that might help me.
What did you have in mind, Anna?
Well, she says a long cruise, maybe to South America. She thinks I should leave right away.
By yourself?
Well, no.
With whom?
Well, she thinks the salt air might be good for her sinus.
I see.
Hello?
I'm here.
Well, what do you think? What should I do?
Well, that's up to you, Donald.
But that doesn't help me. Is that all you have to say?
Donald, I'm afraid that you've reached the point where you're perfectly capable of making your own decisions. Don't you agree?
Well, yes, but if you tell me what to do, I mean...
I'm sorry, Donald.
Well, then I guess I won't be coming. I guess this is goodbye, Dr. Trask.
Goodbye, Donald. Good luck. Is that all you have to say? Oh, no, Donald, that's not all I have to say. I could say, please, don't trade me in for a cruise and rob me of 8 months of my life's work. I could say, please, please, Donald, stay with me and let me try to save you from spending the rest of your life as a doormat to a mother with dirty shoes. I could say, please, don't quit today. Not today of all days.
Somehow, Dr. Trask gets through his day. He has to fight to keep his own personal tragedy out of his eyes and mind. He has to fight against being sucked into the tortured patterns of his patient's troubles, where he wouldn't be able to do them any good. He fights to stay clear, to stay strong. He lets these trembling, unhappy people beat against him over and over again until their patterns are shattered on the hard granite of his indifference. And at last the day is mercifully ended. But Dr. Trask is afraid to go home.
Well, I guess that's everything, Dr. Trask. If you don't need me anymore, I guess I'll run along.
Sit down, Mary, will you?
What is it, Dr. Trask?
I wondered if... Well, if you didn't have anything better to do, if you'd have some dinner with me.
Tonight?
Well, it doesn't matter if you're busy.
I'm not busy.
Then will you?
I'd be flattered.
I don't want you to be flattered. I've got to talk to somebody.
Are you feeling badly about Donald Pearson?
I'm sick about Donald Pearson, but it isn't only that. It's something else. Oh, it's so difficult not to love the weak and hate the arrogant. Oh, I'm sorry, Mary. I've no right to inflict my personal troubles on you. You've been with me so long that sometimes
You have every right. You want to. You helped me once. If there's anything I can do, why...
Surely you've guessed what the trouble is.
Is it Mrs. Trask?
Yes.
Why don't you tell me about it?
Maybe I expected too much from her. We've been married 9 years. I thought I knew her. I thought she knew me, too, but I guess she didn't. She said I was indifferent. I remember the first time she said that. It was a memorable evening. All of a sudden, out of nothing, she put down her newspaper and looked across the room at me. I caught her eyes. I was shocked at what I saw. Paula being insecure, frightened, doubting. She put down her newspaper and looked at me with an expression that I'll never forget.
You're just too darned indifferent about everything.
Paula, what's the matter, darling?
You're indifferent. You haven't paid one bit of attention to me for weeks, not for weeks.
Paula, what brought this on?
Sometimes you're so darned indifferent I could scream. You're too darn sensible about everything.
Well, I never thought there was such a thing as being too sensible. Most people seem to regard it as a fairly desirable trait.
Well, in a husband, it gets dull. You've no idea how dull it gets sometimes, Philip. Good Lord, aren't you ever going to do or say anything wrong? Can't you ever get mad or drunk or silly or something?
Well, Paula, what is this all about? Surely you're not complaining merely because I don't beat you.
Philip, do you love me?
What are you driving at?
Never mind, just tell me. Do you?
Of course I love you. I've loved you for every minute of the 8 years we've been together. I think everything I've ever done should have shown you how much. I don't understand why you need to ask me.
Because you don't tell me very often.
What, are verbal assurances all that mean anything to you?
There you go again. You think I was one of your patients. What do you think about when you kiss me, Philip? Do you analyze me?
No, Paula. I only analyze people who are mentally ill. Tell me you love me. Tell it to me over and over again because I'm afraid and insecure and I don't know what love is, really. Well, that was Paula. Beautiful, popular, charming, and doubting. Always doubting everything. And then one night, about 6 months later, I caught her kissing Jordan Harris. We had a small party. I just happened to come upon them in the kitchen with their arms around each other. They were like a still shot of surprise discovery. My first impulse was to pick up the bread knife and cut Jordan's throat. That flashed in my eyes for a second, but Paula didn't catch it. And instead of the bread knife, I picked up a paper napkin. A paper napkin.
Oh. Well, hello, Phil.
Here's a paper napkin, Jordan. You better wipe the lipstick off your mouth. The others inside might not understand.
I think I'm just a wee little bit tight, darling. Just a wee little bit.
Are you, Paula? Wipe your mouth, Jordan.
Thanks, Phil. I wish I could think of something suitably dramatic to say.
Wipe your mouth and hurry.
Well, I'm in no hurry. I'm fond of Paula. Not ashamed to admit it.
And he tells me, Phil. He tells me how fond he is of me all the time.
Paula, please.
He makes me feel alive, don't you, Jordan? He's full of sharp edges, not all sandpaper down like you, Phil. He kisses me in my own kitchen.
Paula.
He tells me he loves me all the time. I don't even have to ask him. Kiss me again, Jordan.
I'm sorry, Phil. Look, I think maybe I'd better join the others. See you later, Paula.
You're not even mad, are you, Dr. Trent? You're not even going to raise your voice, are you? Not even raise an eyebrow in defense of your happy, happy home.
You've had too much, Paula. You'll feel better in the morning.
Why don't you get with a psychiatry, Dr. Trask? Talk about subjectivity and the realities of environment and inhibitions.
Stop it,
and,
Paula.
And hostility potentials and psychosociality and about all the other things you talk about when you have women laying down on your couch and telling you all...
Shut up, Paula.
Why don't you? It's because you don't care, isn't it? You just don't give a hang, do you? You just don't give a hang whether I rot or drop dead.
Paula, you know that's not true. I've told you that I love you.
Oh, you love me so much, you just struck him down with that calm, cool, collected psychiatrist's voice. Someday, Phil, you'll lose that precious control of yours. Someday you'll get so darn mad or so darn drunk or happy or sick, you'll go screaming, raving nuts. And do you know something? I won't be there. Because I don't think I could wait that long.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it because I kept thinking of all the years filled with trust and loyalty and honesty. None of the recent days filled with doubt, but of the years filled with happiness and all of it meaningful because we'd shared it together. And then this morning it finished. When I came down for breakfast, she was fully dressed with her hat on. I think it annoyed her that I ate so much. 2 eggs and some bacon. She toyed with her coffee and watched me, and it wasn't until I was almost finished that she spoke.
Haven't you anything to say at all?
Like what?
Well, aren't you even going to tell me that... Tell me...
Tell you not to go?
You'd think I was a piece of furniture being taken back to Gimble's. I'm leaving you. Can't you understand that? I'm leaving you.
I know.
Well, then why don't you say something?
Paula, what do you want me to say?
It's just like any other morning, isn't it? 2 eggs, coffee. Hurry, hurry, or I'll miss the 8:27. It doesn't mean anything to you, does it, whether I go or not?
That's not true, Paula.
I know what you're thinking. You're pretending I'm a patient. You're saying to yourself, I mustn't get emotionally involved with this poor, deluded, stupid woman who thinks...
Paula!
That... Well, then why don't you say something?
Your bags are packed, aren't they?
Yes.
You've got your plane tickets, haven't you? You've closed your account at the bank, haven't you?
You know I have.
That would seem to indicate that you want to go and that you're going.
Can't you look at me when you're talking? Must you keep on eating?
Well, I have a very heavy day ahead of me, Paula, and I'm hungry.
You're inhuman. You're so hard, it's like steel. If you tell me, if only once, you just tell me that...
Tell me. Tell me what to do. Make up my mind for me. Lead me. Whether it's where I want to be led or not doesn't matter, just so long as you tell me. Lead me somewhere, anywhere. But I didn't tell her. I got up and kissed her lightly on the cheek and told her I hoped she'd be happy. I'm sorry, Mary, spilling all this out on you, making you listen.
Go on, Dr. Trask.
Mary, I can't do any more than try to show her the way. Paula will always find food for the doubts that seem so necessary to her, until she manages to arrive at her own belief or disbelief in our marriage, independently or by herself.
Without a shove from you.
Without a shove from me. I didn't think that she'd actually leave. Because behind every Paula, unsure of her ability to be cherished, there's always some Jordan Harris ready to drown out the sound of her self-doubts with the noisy ardor of a professional lover. And there's always a Mrs. Pearson behind every Donald, ready to heal his anxiety with a bandage, ready to purge him of swallowed resentment with a pill or a dose of salts. Every time the phone rang today, I've been hoping I'd pick up that receiver and hear Paula say she wasn't going. But she hasn't phoned. She's gone.
I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry.
Donald and Paula, both. Paula is somewhere between home and Reno. Donald is somewhere between this office and hell. Somehow Donald seems to be tied up with Paula. Perhaps because it was today. Paula thinks that to be weak and helpless is to be human. That to be strong is frightening. Well, I guess that's how it is.
Don't you think it would do you good to have some dinner?
Do you mind terribly if I change my mind? I don't think I could stand being social.
I quite understand.
It's done me good to talk about it.
I'm glad. I'm very glad. And I'm very glad I work for you. Well, I'll go now. Try not to think about it too much. I'll see you in the morning. Good night, Dr. Trask.
Good night, Mary. So here I am, sitting in a soft, deep chair, and wondering if I've been wrong. It's 5:30 now, and Donald isn't coming. I keep looking at the door that leads to the waiting room, half hoping to see it open and Donald walk in. But I know it won't open. That much is fact. Donald is lost. All the rest of his life, he'll keep crying helplessly, "What shall I do? Tell me what to do." God, have I been wrong? Should I have pleaded with Donald, pleaded with Paula? Should I have said to Donald, please don't go. Don't give up. You need me so much. Please don't give up when we're nearly at the end. When you're just a step away from confidence and poise and manhood. Should I have fed Paula's doubts and fear by refusing to let her stand on her own feet? Dear God, I don't know. Please show me. Please tell me. Was I wrong? Well, I might as well call it a day.
Hello, Dr. Trask.
Donald. Donald.
I decided to continue. I decided that South America wasn't the way to do it, that running away wouldn't help, so I'm back.
Donald, I'm so glad.
Mother's going alone. In fact, I guess she's thrown me out. I told her I was going to stand on my own two feet and stick with you. I thought I'd just drop in and tell you. I know it's too late for today, but if it's all right with you, I'll be in Thursday as usual.
Yes, Donald. It's all right with me. They're all the same, and I was right. I was right with Donald, and I must be right with Paula. She must be at home. She must be waiting there for me. She didn't phone because she was embarrassed. Please, God, make her be waiting for me when I get home. Please.
Treat me like I was a patient. Well, one of these days you'll lose that precious control of yours. Someday you'll get so darn mad or so darn drunk or happy or sick, you'll go screaming, raving, nuts. And you know something? I won't be there because I don't think I can wait that long.
She must be there. She must.
Tell me. Just tell me. Tell me you love me.
I do love her. I do.
You love me so much you just struck him down with that calm, cool, collected psychiatrist voice.
No, no. Please make her be there. If she isn't, then everything I've learned, everything I've ever tried to practice is wrong, proven wrong. Please, God, make my wife be at home. Have me open the door and find her sitting there in the living room. And please, have her say this. Have her walk up to me and put her hands in mine and look me in the eye and say to me,
I didn't go, darling. I didn't go. I got as far as the station, but I didn't go. I'm home now and I'm never going to leave. You were right. Everything you said and left unsaid was so right. I understand now. Being the way you are is you. It's what makes you so strong for those who need your help. And did you notice something?
Yes, I noticed.
I didn't ask you whether you were glad I didn't go. I know you're glad. I didn't need to ask you. And you don't have to tell me you love me. I know you love me just as I know I love you. Don't ask me why I'm so sure. It just suddenly burst on me. I don't know why. It seemed to come to me all of a sudden.
Please make her be there.
And you won't have to be angry with me for all this fuss. I promise you I'll never demand anger from you again. Never.
Paula. Oh, Paula, please be there. Please be at home waiting for me.
Thornwood! This stop, Thornwood!
When Philip Trask steps from the train, he walks very quickly. His house is only 5 minutes from the station, and when he goes to the corner of his street, he starts to run. He can see his home. It's just a matter of seconds now. He's trying to choke down the lump in his throat, but the tears are welling up in his eyes, and the tightness is growing in his chest, and suddenly the whole day has been too much for him. As the waves of emotion rise to engulf him, he hopes that this is going to be the moment, that it's going to be a fine moment, and that he will be able to give himself up to it wholeheartedly. And he has an idea that he'll be saying some strange and wonderful things, and that Paula will discover that he is much more like everyone else than she has ever imagined.
Please. Please let her be. Paula? Paula?
Hello. Hello, darling.
Paula. Oh, Paula, I love you.
Have just heard The Unguarded Moment as written for Attraction 53 on Radio City Playhouse by Harry W. Junkin. The script was adapted from a Cosmopolitan magazine story of the same name by Ernest Lehman. Dr. Philip Trask was played by John Larkin. Paula was Marilyn Erskine.
The Radio City Playhouse on Tuned 2 yesterday from the 29th of August 1949 on NBC. The female lead, Marilyn Erskine, in that episode was a seasoned radio actress even by that point in her career, having starred in great plays alongside Orson Welles and Betty Gart on the Mercury Theater, and also episodes of The Cavalcade of America, the soap opera Laura Lawton, and the children's program Let's Pretend. You're listening to An Hour of Romance on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of the show Romance called Cordoba, the CBS episode from July 10th, 1954.
And now, from Hollywood, Romance. Set deep in old Mexico, against a dramatic background of color and excitement, E. Jack Newman has written a haunting new story that we bring you today. Concerning the encounter of a celebrated bullfighter, played by William Conrad, and a girl from the States named Judith, as portrayed by Joyce McCluskey, we present Mr. Newman's Cordoba.
Mexico, Jude, you can always bet it'll be hot, dusty, and dirty. Here we are, Hotel San Carlo, garden spot of Mexico. Might as well make the best of it, I guess. I said I'd bring you here, and here we are. What?
Look.
The poster? So?
It's him, Will, from Cordoba, Matador de Toros. Oh, Will, at last we're going to see him.
Ah, Jude. All the way from Acapulco, you've been sitting there thinking of something, building things up. Jude, he's just another bullfighter. Suppose when you see him, he isn't all you got him cracked up to be. What then?
Fairman Cordoba is one of the bravest men in the world.
Yeah, how do you know that?
Well, I've read about him for years.
Yeah. The bravest, the most fearless, the most daring. All of us got a little yellow streak in us somewhere, Jude.
Oh, Will.
You know what I think? I think Cordoba is just another thing in the sky for you. You always have to be looking up, not ahead.
It's just that you seem to push me into the only kind of world I can't... I have to live. Never mind, Will.
Okay. But answer me one thing, Jude, and I won't bring it up again.
What?
If he is just a clown, nothing at all like what you're expecting, not the bravest, the most fearless...
I think I'd die, Will.
Let's get registered and try the shower. You grab the little case in the back there, and I'll get the rest of the stuff in the trunk, okay?
Hungry. Hot. You're walking through life, Will. Why don't you stop and look at it? At the strength and beauty and courage of it. You're not going to take this away from me, Will. Not this. You've laughed and made fun of almost everything we've seen so far. But this is where we'll see him fight. This is where he'll walk out and look at death and be contemptuous. Tomorrow afternoon, you'll see, Will. You'll see.
Hey, that must be the plane from Mexico City. You know, I wish we'd have taken that plane instead of driving down here.
Wow, it's hot. Let's get inside.
Send me a wire, Fermin. I've been waiting at this airport since 10 this morning.
So you wait from 10 this morning.
The Caliph of Monterrey arrives something like the Tigre of Monterrey, I see.
Never mind that. Let's get out of this heat. Do I have a decent hotel?
The San Carlo is a nice place.
Yeah. The others get here?
On the 10 o'clock plane.
It's hot. There's a wind. It'll be like this tomorrow, you know, out there. What price did you settle on?
$1,500.
What? 1,500. I said 3,000 bottom, 3,000 bottom, absolute bottom. What kind of a manager are you?
A good one. 1,500 is all I could get.
Not for Cordoba. 1,500. No fight in this rotten place.
In this rotten place? Even here they know that the great Cordoba, the Caliph of Monterrey, has had trouble in his last appearance. A bargaining advantage they have.
What about the other 1,000 appearances? Bargaining advantage we have.
The last appearance is the one that counts, Fermin.
Stay. Do it, Fermin. Make a good show. It would help us when we get back to Mexico City.
Do I have any choice? What do I know except the sand and the sword and the bulls, huh? It is always that for me.
Fermin, you use reality as a sword, and you turn it against yourself. You will feel better when you have a shower and a change of clothes.
You waited from 10 o'clock, eh? Well, it took no fat off your chin, Leon. No heat or sweat or sand for Leon, the manager. No bulls for Leon, the manager. Just talk and papers and drinks. You sit in a chair and drink away your life. I go out in the ring and offer mine. So drink today, Leon. And drink tomorrow. You know there will be a tomorrow for you. And another drink. But I fight the bull. And for me, there may not be a tomorrow. Stuffy like a tomb.
Past six. Would you like to rest a bit? Have an early dinner and get to bed early?
Rest? With that noise?
Fiesta. I guess it has started.
Right beneath my window. And you say rest, huh?
Try. You need it. In an hour or so, I will return. It will be cooler. And we can go out to the plaza and look and see what kind of bulls they are raising at Manatiwa this year.
Never mind.
But Fermin, you always go out to see...
They are just bulls, sons of cows. Now, wait. An hour or so is fine. I do not want to spend the night alone. I will look at them.
Fermin?
Huh?
The last fight in Cuernavaca. How was it?
You saw it? It was terrible.
But with you, how was it with you, Fermin?
I will eat alone tonight, manager.
I am your friend.
Get out! Get out!
A ball tonight, huh, Jude? Oh, hey, guess what's down in the lobby? Jude?
What, Will?
Your boy.
Huh?
The old Caliph of Monterrey himself, Fermin Cordoba. He's staying here.
Will?
Yep, right here in the hotel. I recognize him from all those pictures you've been showing me. Anyhow, they said Cordoba was on his way to the plaza to look at the bulls. I'm going to go out and look at him. And Jude, come to think of it, he don't look like such a big, brave guy to me. Oh, you know, there was a fellow from Winfield, Kansas in the bar, Jude. He says most of these bullfights are just put on for the tourists.
right
the
now.
The bulls are dope. They have their horns.
He's out there looking at his life and his death. Will, don't you see? He is a great man doing just that. Seeing life and death the way you and I look at a plate of food. He's there while his lovely day ends. And I'm here. Oh, Will, can't you see?
Still the greatest.
This is a man, Will.
Cleaners and things like that. Well, he told me they're working on a deal with the Mexican government to get to... Hey, Jude, where are you going?
I'll be back in a little while, Will.
It'll be dark in another half hour. I don't want you out on those streets all by yourself.
Wait. I will do it alone.
I came back for you and brought you here.
I can look at them alone.
Don't you want someone to talk with, Fermin?
Go back, Leon. I speak to the bulls. They understand. Go. Toro. You, Toro, and you there with the white patch, listen to me. Tomorrow afternoon, one of us will die. Perhaps all of us will die. What a place to die, eh, Toro? In the heat and the dirt, while the signs look down at us. Ron Castillo, 100% Distillado. Refrescos Canada Dry. And the foolish turistas, they sit and wonder and gape. And then they go home after they fight. But we, you or I, Toro, we... Madre de Dios, I'm afraid. I'm afraid to die. Why is this fear in me? It grows and grows, and tomorrow, here in the heat and the dust, with the crowd and the signs looking down, I shall die.
Your boyfriend Cordoba, huh? Well, did you see him?
Yes, I saw him.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to him?
No.
Why not?
Please, Will.
Well, why didn't you talk to him?
I couldn't.
Ah, so the big brave man was too good to talk to you, huh? Was that it? Jude? Hey, Jude, what is it? Oh, what's the matter now?
Return to romance and our story, Cordoba, in just a moment. When it becomes an emergency, it's savings that talk. When sickness strikes, in time of accident or emergency, it helps to be in good financial shape. That's why it pays and pays and pays to invest in United States savings bonds regularly. Have the money deducted automatically through payroll savings or through your bank's bond a month plan. The new 3% interest United States savings bonds. Better than ever. And now for the second act of Cordoba, as we return to romance.
Good plumber could revolutionize this place. Well, I got a shower of sorts anyhow, and I'm shaved. I feel better. Hey, what's that? What are you reading?
Something I bought before we left Acapulco.
El Art de Torir. Don't tell me. The Art of Bullfighting, right?
Yes.
What's it say about your boyfriend, huh? What's it say?
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Jude. Well, you get a little rest. You'll feel better. I think I'll go down to the bar and have a couple. Plenty of time before the fight. We want you in good shape to go out and see your brave old boyfriend do his stuff.
Don't call him that. Don't say that. Don't ever say that.
Hey, Jude, what is it?
Judas, that's my name. Can't you call me Judas just once? Oh, why don't you go downstairs and get your drink, Will?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I will. You try to get some rest, Jude. Judith. Can I get you an aspirin or something?
No.
Okay, I just asked. I'll be back in an hour or so. Wow, it's getting hot again. You're better off here, just resting up.
If I hadn't seen it, if I stood there and heard him be afraid, it'd be all right. But he is afraid. He's afraid the same as Will or me or anybody we know. And there is no beauty or strength or courage. There's just fear.
How is it today, Fermin?
You see, the filthy wind is still here. The heat. That is how it is today.
You get any sleep?
With all that going on?
How about the dressing? You want help with that?
See, come in. What of the bulls?
The lots were drawn this morning. You take the best two.
Huh? The one with the white patch is one of the best two.
Yes, good bull. Fine. Very good, that one.
White horns. Whiter than the others. He's the one.
He's first, and you are the first on the card.
So it will happen right away.
What?
Nothing. I'd better shave and dress.
I can wait with you. Plenty of time.
Time? There is no time, manager.
Jude, the only reason we came here was because you just had to see this bullfight. Now you say you don't want to go.
That's true, Will. I don't want to go.
Well, I sure don't understand it, Jude. You've been dying to see this boy, Cordoba. Now you don't want to go.
No.
Well, look, are you going or aren't you?
No.
I told those people from Winfield we'd drive them out. I sure don't want to go, but I'll have to drive them out now that I committed myself.
You go ahead, Will.
A fine thing. You want to come here and see Cordoba fight. I want to stay in Acapulco and lay on the beach. You're laying down and I'm going to the fight. Jude, why?
Oh, go on, Will. Go on. You wouldn't understand.
You said that lots of times before, Jude. I wouldn't understand. But think of this, honey. There are some things that even I understand.
Have gone to the plaza.
How much time have I?
A good hour. I will take you in my car.
A good hour, you say?
Yes. Maybe the wind will die in that hour.
I can lay down and rest here. When the time comes, bring the car to the back and I will go down the back way and not have to meet any of the others.
You can lie down in the suit? Rest in the suit?
Rest is when you are alone.
I will get the car.
Here.
Huh? Come in, Leon. Has an hour already passed?
Mr. Cordoba.
What? How did you get here? Who are you?
My name's Judith Myers. Mrs. Myers, I'm from Terre Haute.
American?
Yes.
I am on exhibition in a few minutes at the plaza. Now I'm busy.
Don't let me go, please.
What are you here for?
Mr. Cordoba, I was at the plaza last night when you went out to see the bulls. I heard you praying.
What?
You spoke to them, to yourself. But you wanted someone to speak to, didn't you? I know what fear is. I've been afraid all my life, Mr. Cordoba.
What is that to me?
Trust me. Please. I know bullfighting is not a sport. It is a ritual. The bull must die, the man must live. When the bull dies and the man lives, all that is hunger and pain and wanting in life dies. And all that is strength and beauty and courage lives. Mr. Cordoba.
You believe these things because you have read them?
I believe them at first because I read them, yes. I believe them because killing a bull would be senseless and cruel otherwise. But I believe them mostly because of you.
But we have never met.
Mr. Cordoba. You have become a world to me, a whole world. Strength and beauty and courage. Don't ask me why I made it that way. I couldn't begin to tell you. But don't. Please, don't destroy it. Don't destroy me.
What is your name again? Judith?
Yes. Judith Myers.
Judith, this hunger and pain and wanting which must die, it has horns. Wide horns.
You die. I die.
This is why you came here to me.
Yes.
All today, last night, I hoped I would find someone I could speak to about this. Someone who could tell me what it is, why it is. But now that is not necessary. No. Today I will not die in the sand beneath the signs. The hunger and the pain and the wanting will die, Judith. You have told me a reason for living.
After all, Will.
Well, I sure am glad. They're just getting ready to start. Hey! Oh, pretty fancy, huh? There's your boy, Jude, right there, right in the middle. Oh, look at that strut. Hey, look, he's coming over here. What do you think of that?
I should say I killed because of you, senora. Adios.
Well, I declare, isn't that something? He's going to dedicate the bull to you when the time comes. Oh, I'm glad, Jude. Judith. You know, honey, last night after you met him at the plaza here, I had a feeling you were disappointed in him.
Will.
I'm not going to ask you about it now. I just know that everything's okay. And looking at him, I'd say you were right about him being brave.
This time, Will, I know I'm right.
Is produced and directed by Fred McKay. Editorial supervision is by Het Mannheim. You have heard Cordoba, written especially for Romance by E. Jack Newman. Joyce McCluskey was heard as Judy, William Conrad as Cordoba, Parley Bear as Will, and Jack Crucian as Leon. Special music was composed by Jerry Goldsmith and played by Jose Barroso. And now this is Roy Rowan inviting you to hear Romance next week and every Saturday morning at this same time. There's a delightful old Norwegian folk tale that purports to explain why the sea is salt. It has to do with an old North Sea captain and his salt-making mill. CBS Radio's Let's Pretenders tell it their way later today on most of these same stations. If you're 6, 16, or 66, you'll enjoy every minute of Let's Pretend today at the Stars address. Stay tuned now for Stars Over Hollywood, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. Gary Crosby and his guests entertain you Sunday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
Romance Untuned to Yesterday, heard on July 10th, 1954 on CBS Radio. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of Romance Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.